It all started 200 episodes ago, four black men talking every week on Sunday night on Zoom. And at some point we thought we should hit record and see what happens. And I'll tell you what happened. 200 episodes later, it turned into a full-blown show, a full-blown podcast, a network, a family, a group of people who actually came together around the 8 million black children and produced a hell of a lot of content. We are going to celebrate tonight. Let's do this. Well, hello, all our friends and family in Eight Black Hands Land. Guess what? We are back. And guess what is going to be happening tonight? Look who we got. We got
you, the
whole crew. We got the original new edition, including Ralph Tresvant and all. Everybody, can you feel,
you know, so am I Ralph and that's he Johnny? That's
what's up. No. Reef is Johnny.
Well, the Johnny is new, he came later. Johnny was new.
Yeah,
Johnny was one of several news. We should say at the outset, Ish has been kind enough
I'm
to
sure
sit
it's
in.
A dig in there. I don't know what that means.
Ish has been kind enough to agree to be with us through Black History Month. So as we come to his last night, which incidentally ends up being our 200th episode, guess who we brought back? Bobby Brown himself. Bobby fans the crack. Without the crack.
That's my prerogative.
Bobby was my a bad prerogative. Boy, man. Bobby was cold.
I don't think he gets as much credit as
Bobby was cold.
Bobby made enough. All the money. Bobby made enough. All the money. Let's be real. When he left, he made all the money. So show me some other Grammys in there. Show me some other.
And that other relationship, God bless the dead. Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, on a happier note, Random Ray. So folks, listen, I feel very good and vindicated about 200 episodes. Especially, let me just say a couple of things. Number one, wasn't planned to be a show, wasn't planned to be a broadcast, wasn't planned to be a podcast, wasn't planned to be any of that. Number two, has been completely DIY, not funded by anybody. We all have jobs. We all have organizations. We all have other things happening in the world. And this show has remained completely DIY and independent. We have done live shows. Where have we done shows? Name some of the cities.
Arkansas, City. Little Rock. We were in Indy. We were in Pittsburgh. We did a show.
Baton Rouge.
West
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Philly, born and raised. New York. Did we do
Minneapolis?
Minneapolis.
In a church, no less. We
South Carolina. Sure. What was that? Charleston.
Mm-hmm. See, man, we have
Oakland. Oaktown.
Sharif said Oakland, yeah. Our first live show was in Oakland.
Vegas, D.C.
Yeah.
I love it. We have done live shows. We have done special shows. We've had organizations have us come and do their annual virtual events, right? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. If it had not been, I'm just going to say something crazy. If it had not been for the pandemic, we'd be more famous than basketball.
I don't know about basketball, but definitely the pandemic was a hiccup. Yes.
Yeah. More famous than baseball, then, at least. Okay. More famous than golf, because any sport that you can be fat and play is not a sport. So more famous than golf.
What? I missed y'all, man. This is. What? Thank y'all for having me back. I love it.
Let me ask y'all a question. What is so important about this show, about black men having the space specifically to talk and dialogue on their own terms? Look at that profound ass question. Look at that. They just, oh my God, what? This ain't class, y'all.
I'm a guest. I don't speak to y'all call on me on this.
Stop it. You ain't no daggone guest.
Hey, listen. Reason, I show up to your house and I ask for a glass of water. Don't show me what a fridge is. Just I'm a guest. I'm not, you know what I'm saying?
You know what? In our tradition, I think you're a guest for 6 days, maybe 10 days. After that, you are part. And so since this is 200 episodes and you only, you know, tapped out for 7. So that means you're well beyond. So jump in there.
I'll jump in and say, you know, when we started this show, you know, it was therapy for me. I needed it. We were going to these conferences and we would see each other and we would support each other's work. And, you know, but like we would be in these conferences in the back talking and be like, yo, like I would think I was crazy. And then I would be talking to Chris, I'd be talking to Sharif, I'd be talking to Ray. And it's like, oh no, we're not crazy. Like this is, you know, we should start having these calls. And we would have those calls and those calls kept me sane. They kept me in the game for a long time. And you know, and I think that it was so, so needed. At the time when we started it. And I think that we, you know, people misremember that these type of conversations that we're having were not happening as honestly and freely as we've been a part of. And I'm so glad that this show has opened it up for a lot of other people, you know, but, you know, the same way you always got to pay Big Daddy Kane his respect. You know what I mean? I think we showed people that they could have a different type of conversation, that wasn't a presentation, that didn't have to follow this, you know, this structure or use whatever type of language, but four Black men authentically talking about their experiences in education and about our people with love and care. It became a necessity for me every single week. So that's why it was important then. And I think it's important now. And I appreciate you all allowing me to be on a big part of that journey. It really meant a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for me, I just learned so much. I mean, I remember where I was and we were talking. I don't think we were, you know, filming it at that time or, you know, had the cameras. And I remember particularly Ray and Cole talked about Nipsey Hussle. And I had not heard of Nipsey Hussle. And it was like, you know, like, and they were like really shook up, like, you know, when he was murdered. But that caused me to go look into like what he was doing and what he had been up to and just like his, you know, community facing work, you know. And so I think for me, it's been just a really interesting and beautiful learning journey, you know, just hearing different perspectives. And I think that's my favorite part, that we are united around, you know, the 8 million Black children and others, but particularly the 8 million Black children and the different angles that people can, you know, try to attack this work, you know, and appreciate the nuances and differences that people may have. Look, I mean, this is my first time interacting with a Black Republican. I usually see him on Fox News, but, you know, this is my first time actually saying like, oh, I know someone who, you know what I mean? Like, this is my first time. Like, you know what I mean?
You know what? I will say, put a plug in. Ray, you could jump in here, man. I will put a plug in. I don't think we knew we were so different when we started, mm-hmm. because one thing that we had in common was that we felt like the world was trying to make us crazy. Like we, you know, in mm-hmm. separate instances, separate mm-hmm. from each other. One of right. the conversations I used to have with Ray before we started doing this made me feel like affinity for Ray because him and I have both been through similar things. We both have been through some things in this education game that I won't go into, but you feel very isolated and alone when you're going through it. And then Charles and I would have conversations on a separate part of the world. And there were folks trying to make him feel crazy. Right. Like, and then when we came together, it's hard to make all of us feel crazy together. Right. You got a Republican, an independent, a libertarian, a straight up Democrat on one show. But that actually really didn't show as much as four brothers that had been through some things.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, since you put it on me, I'm forced to speak. I'm just, bro, I'm taking it all in. I got my bro back. You know, I'm super excited to see Dr. Cole. Been watching him from afar do his thing. Not even from afar, from a close, because that's my man. And to have him back, I'm in a celebratory mood. I put in the Johnny Walker Blue. Man, we ready, man. Let's get to it, man. What are we talking about? Let's go.
He's drinking. He's drinking. I mean, for people that's sitting watching, Ray is drinking. I mean, I hate to state the obvious, you know, whatever. Let me ask y'all a question just about, that was a question around kind of what does it mean for us to have this space and to be able to kind of know that we're not crazy or whatnot. How do you answer, though, because we have all heard it, people thinking that this should be some space that it's not. Like, it's not sufficient just to be Black men. We need to bring in some, let me dance around the topic a little bit. We need to add some other people's or flavors or things. I mean, can we just have this and not have to have it be about that? I feel like I talked all the way around the question, but
you did.
You did. It's all right. It's all right. I'm trying. In the answer, it will be illuminated.
Oh, good. Okay. You answer first then.
I'm fine. I think we've all heard it and you know, whereas as four Black men, sometimes, you know, and not just in this space, in other spaces too, it's just like, yo, you are incomplete without, you know, maybe a women's perspective, or you are incomplete without, you know, other people's perspective. And it's not, the thing about that I love is that, like, no, we're making space for us as Black men. We're recognizing that we have a unique experience, just like other folks, other groups of people, you know, like we can have unity and also carve out space, you know, for us as well. And it's not like we've never had, you know, sisters' perspectives and voices and experiences, you know, in the show. Quite often we talk about it. We have sisters, you know, on, but it is interesting, you know, the amount of time that I've heard, like, you know, not just like, oh, can we be a guest, but like critique sometimes of like, well, y'all, you know, y'all don't have this, like, and like, no, it's not, let me tell you something. It's not a deficit for four Black men to talk with each other in a space of four Black men. That's not a deficit. And I challenge anyone who has a skewed vision of four Black men being able to have a public conversation in a kind of fishbowl type and think that, oh, they are lacking something. I would say, like, really reflect on your own self, you know, with that type of, you know, critique.
First of all, we get critiqued for not being involved enough in education or in the lives of our children, which you all have all heard me soapbox that one to death. Like, I am sick of Black men being invisible to America when they think about fathers or when they think about fathering, because some of us are fathering other people's children. Like, we have a lot of fathering to go around. I'm sick of us being invisible. So that critique, why would it just be men? Why wouldn't you have other people, whatever? To me, feels like a big missing of the point, first of all. It feels like some Whoopi Goldberg energy, some, you ain't never going to be nothing till you do right by me. You know what I'm saying? It feels like it's on some
I don't know. I listen,
right? Whoopi's character in Color Purple. Yeah, I got that. I was like, why Whoopi catch a stray? But I got you. Yeah. Till you do right by me.
Till you do right by me. You know, I'm going to put it on you, Charles.
Oh, that's cool, man. I think, I mean, you did dance around it, but you know. Since I don't have as much responsibility right now, so I'm going to just say what you was trying to say. Listen, we've gotten a lot of feedback, right? Hey, you need this on your show. You need that. We've actually gotten feedback of what we need to have on our show whilst the people that were giving us the feedback were in a show that was all one group, which I thought was really funny. And I think that, you know, sometimes you damned if you do or you damned if you don't. And what I mean by that is that people say, you got to get your own house in order first. Y'all need to talk to each other. Men need to lead, men need to do this, and men need to do that. And then when you try to do that, then it's saying, well, it's excluding people. And I think that what we tried to do was anybody that we, you know, that asked to be on, that has something to add to the conversation, we were really inviting. And we've had a lot of really amazing people come on the show, some that we agree with, some that we don't, right? Because we want to have real conversation. And I think the other special thing about this show and why this group was important, like Chris said, we did not plan to have a Democrat, a Republican, an independent, a libertarian. But when we did and we saw that, oh, we believe in this sun, this guiding sun that says Black people deserve better. You know, we need to watch out for these Black kids, regardless of what type of school they go to. But what we also wanted to display was four Black men that have a similar vision, but disagree with ways on how to get there. I miss the arguments. I think that those arguments of real steel sharp, iron sharpening iron is needed. I think that we live in a time where if you don't agree with somebody 100%, they think that you hate each other, that you're enemies. And we are teaching a generation that discourse is bad. Discourse is actually really, really good, and it helps you grow. And I've grown a lot in this podcast. I've grown a lot by talking to these three other men, and Ish as well, who I've seen over the years and gotten to know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I learned from these people. And I also had, as the oldest in my family and not having older siblings, it gave me people to bounce off of. It gave me people that could correct me. And I struggled, like, in a lot of different ways when I was doing the show. And having those brothers be there that I know, that I love, and that I trust, you know, it means something. And I think sometimes men need male energy to match the energy that they got in certain moments. And you can't find it in a lot of places. So I hope that there's more groups that kind of pop up that way. And I'm really supportive of other groups that do it. I think Black women should have, like, spaces for themselves. I think Asian men should have a space. I think everybody should do the stuff that they need to do for themselves. And then we come together and see what we got and mesh in that way. So, you know, I'm grateful to the format, and anybody that's ever had that critique, if they ask to be on and engage in conversation with us and truly engage from an earnest place, we've always said yes. So sometimes people just want to complain.
Well, and I'll say this, we have set up other platforms, you know, so for diversity of folks, right? I mean, there was a time where Ray was like setting up a podcast broadcast a day, for different persons. Yeah, just you know, like, and to the extent some of it stuck, and some of it, you know, people got to prove whether or not they were about that life or not. They got to prove whether or not it was like what they wanted to do. And there was a range of people. I mean, women, men, some that were parents, some that were educators. And it all came off of this platform, which I feel very proud of. It was like it opened up doors for other people. Ish, I want to bring you in on this one point. You've been here for about six shows now. You were with us through Black History Month. That was a big gift for us to have you here. But as you come to a wrap on your Black History Month tour.
No, residency.
Residency. Okay. Yeah. Like Las Vegas or something like that. You experienced the disagreement, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like more than almost any guest, you caught it over several shows. How was that for you to go into a space of Black men and have all the Black energy and know that most of the time we were disagreeing, but we were still able to be agreeable? Like, how'd you experience that?
I mean, it goes back to what Dr. Cole was just talking about. It's a space where folks can disagree without being disagreeable, and that we can really get into some heavy conversation that doesn't usually happen outside of certain spaces. Like, I think sometimes we take for granted, sometimes in the bubbles that we exist in, sometimes that these conversations are actually happening in real time. So I appreciate just the ability to sit with y'all and disagree. And throw out some ideas that, you know, I can talk to folks that I deal with, but not necessarily exist in the same orbit as y'all do, right? And from a union perspective, from a perspective of, you know, the Black radical tradition, in which I like to think I'm part of that intellectual genealogy, right? I think that these type of conversations need to happen even more. And I'm just blessed to even be in a position where I can be disagreed with. Sometimes folks just be like, you know, give deference because, you know, you're a Black man, you talking that smack. I'm like, okay, that's Ishmael that's talking smack, right? But like here, we really engaged in these conversations, in these disagreements, leaned into them, right? All 10 toes, you know, 10 toes down. And that doesn't happen. And I'm super humbled to even be like asked to come during Black History Month. You know, the episode we did around the unsanitized Martin Luther King, like folks are still hitting me up about that conversation. And it's like that gave them something to think about. And I think that's what was produced, you know, for my time. I had something to think about, you know, whether we're talking about like standardized testing. I had to go back to the drawing board and be like, okay, I'm not all against testing, but this is what I'm against.
Woo. He caught it on testing, boy. Woo, that was it. when I think like there, yeah, that's one example of some issues that have come up on this show where we have had wildly different ideas and we were able to make it through it, just like adults and get through it. I can. So I wanted to ask a question around like your favorite show and your least favorite show. I want to make a prediction with all of y'all that one of your least favorite shows was one of the ones that I was responsible for.
No. Nope. Well, yeah, I guess you were partly responsible for
it. Actually, two shows, now that I think about it, because you might... Okay, Ray, which one are you thinking about?
Bro, we brought a guest on, and she ain't answered not one question the whole time. And, like, we were, like, positioning her in order to answer the question. And, bro, she answered none of the questions. And it's like we were tiptoeing around it and being extremely delicate with this guest because we didn't want to come off as, like, oh, you guys are not treating women with respect or whatever, right? But, like, yo, I think me and Charles had a very hard time.
That would be the Brianna Joy show. Yeah.
Names.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the show's on the record. It's out there. The show's on the record, right? Like, it was kind of obvious. I wasn't going to say that one. The one that I was going to say was the fight at Disneyland.
Oh, yeah. That was one.
Y'all hated that show.
We just have a fundamental, but I think this is good. I think because I think it was actually two of us. I think it was kind of me and Ray and like you and Reef. And the fundamental difference was I don't like just showing our mess to a bunch of people and without context. You know what I'm saying? Like where it's like it. We know it's ratchetness in every single culture.
But is that our mess stuff? I don't look at that as our mess.
Somebody's microphone.
What happened? Hey.
I don't know. But see, that's somebody big and new.
That's Cointel Pro.
Yeah, right. But I think I got the points that was being made. I got the point that Chris was making, right? Like I wasn't mad at that. I was just like we could pick a million different things to kind of show. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to have a different view. I will say, I didn't hate the Brianna Joy show. I thought strategically, I understood it. I felt bad for Chris in the show. It was Chris that got the blowback, not us. Chris got blowback from that show. And I don't think it was fair that he got the blowback. And I think that guest was, I think she's very smart. And I think she's actually still growing and doing some dope stuff. I just don't think that it just wasn't it for what we did. We were trying to have a different conversation and I it kind of turned into Chris and Bree. But I think we grew from that. I think we learned from it. And, I definitely think why is the camera on me?
Let me ask you this. Do you feel like we created a safe space to have that conversation?
I hate that term. I almost cursed.
All right, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. But I think you asked it the right way. And this is where I started to struggle, right? Yeah. If you look at where the show started and how we wasn't concerned about that stuff. The show started because we wasn't live. There were no cameras. Mm-hmm. It was like us over a Zoom or recording. Yeah. But it was like us talking to each other and people just got what they got, right? So we didn't have the live interaction, which I'm grateful for. That's what the pandemic was. But we wasn't, so to speak, playing to a crowd, right? And we all have done it, right? Like it's just, when people are there, you don't want to ignore them. I think that, so it wasn't about creating a safe space. It was about us having some real conversation about what we felt was going on and the chips kind of fell where they may. But we got bigger, we got successful. And with success comes responsibility and some responsibilities that you didn't really ask for. I didn't want to be the face of this movement or that movement or whatever. But then people would be at us, right? Like, oh, y'all got this platform. You can't say this without saying that. And you can't do this. And then when you try to be respectful to everybody, it waters down a real conversation that we would have. So we might've made a space safer for other people, but we made it more dangerous for ourselves.
Appreciate that.
But you would agree that we've had some really dangerous conversations when the mics are off, right?
Oh God.
Yeah.
So and with full knowledge that what you just said is true, the Spider-Man principle, like with great responsibility, whatever. Come on, man.
Great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, right. Like that. Like there was a part of which where the platform wasn't big enough to care. So you know, we just said what we said. And then, yeah, it did come with some responsibility at some point. I don't know. Like, I disagree with y'all. I disagree with you on the Disneyland fight for one reason. Mm-hmm. I do agree to some extent on the, like, not showing all your mess all the time. I also agree with there's fair game in kind of cultural phenomena. Mm-hmm. We can't pretend like nobody sees it, right? And if we're not leading the charge on discussing what is going positive and not going positive with our own culture, mm-hmm. it's going to be left up to somebody else to have that conversation, right? It's not like the conversation is not going to be had. I prefer it be had by intelligent people, mm-hmm. like than exploited without any context. I don't think we talked about that particular incident without any context or mm-hmm. without any background right. or without any insight or not the way that other people were talking about it, because other people were talking about it from a place of ignorance or malice, you know, malice towards us. I don't think we were approaching that conversation from malice. Anyways, when you have like a show that has a spectrum from liberal to conservative, I could see why a incident like that wouldn't ring true the same way for everybody, like the need to even address it. What are some of y'all least favorite shows? That was one I predicted would be your least favorite. Most favorite or least favorite? I don't have to go negative. You don't have to go negative. What are some of your favorite shows, favorite guests, or least favorite shows, least favorite? No, nah, let's not say least favorite guests because we don't want to diss nobody. Nah, hell, diss him. Never mind.
OG, the Howard Fuller show was dope.
Yeah, anytime Howard is on.
I was about to say, like, wherever Howard goes, that's a dope
first
show.
Guest, one of our biggest shows of all time.
Yeah, that's cheating.
Yeah, that is cheating. And Dr. Carr, you know. Did we have him on this show? Did we have him on Freedom Friday?
No, Freedom Friday. Yeah,
Freedom Friday. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Hey Charles,
Howard is cheating
before this shit turns into Freedom Sunday.
And you're still not free.
And you're still not free.
I loved the show with Killer Mike. Stop. I want to look at y'all. I don't want the four.
Can y'all see how Charles is set looks like CNN crispy?
It really does.
Over the rest
look,
of us.
I got, you know, now.
Oh,
I got
wow.
Now,
wow.
Man. Yeah.
Oh,
$100.
This is what happens.
He got your Prince Color Purple in the right. background. Hey, and everything.
You got to show love. You got to show love.
See, this is when you went off and you married Whitney. And
is this
like,
what it was?
Know, they you come back with the crispy. Clean video.
Ask the audience what their favorite shows were.
That's a good question.
Audience members, let us know. I was gonna say I loved we had some really good guests. I love the Killer Mike show. I love Killer Mike. I love him. Like, so for me, you know, he represents, like, I grew up loving Ice Cube, and he reminds me a lot of Ice Cube. And even though a lot of people didn't see it, the Jalen Rose show. I mean, these people mean something to me in different ways. Like, I grew up watching the Fab Five. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was a fan of what Jalen was doing at his school. And just, I think he's a real personable person. And Jalen was very honest with us. And even off camera, I was asking him some stuff and it came into fruition. He and his wife were still together at that time. And, you know, then they weren't, but he just had some real game for me off mic, and I appreciated it. And the Killer Mike moment, like I said, I think Killer Mike is one of those people that's really good at what they do and actually has an opinion. And I think a lot of people have a thought about him and then they hear him talk. Even if you disagree, like, oh, that actually makes sense. I might not agree with him, but the way he says it is dope. So those were just some that I was just really, really happy to have. And then the sister from Baltimore, Centelius, I really liked, I just liked her. And I liked her for the show, but I liked her. She was so grateful. Like, she was so grateful afterwards. And I feel like she just poured into us. Like, even after that, like, I feel like she'll still randomly send stuff. And I just, you know, that reminded me why Chris kind of does what he does. And Chris has always kind of been like, yo, these superintendents and school leaders, or even like just how we met Ray, they not in a position to be able to fight how I can fight. And she was the epitome of, it's a lot of stuff I want to say, a lot of stuff I want to do, but she carried herself with such grace And even on the show, she didn't necessarily let loose. But I felt like it was such an emotional catharsis, like cathartic moment for her being able to do the show and have people stand up for her. And so I think those three are three outside of like Fuller and a few other people that I really remember. You know what I'm saying?
My favorite shows have been our live shows. We did a show in Little Rock that was dope because, number one, it was a historic town, and the people that we met during the day before we did the show, it was dope. We met folks in the community, went to a Black radio station that just had like a ton of information and knowledge and background for us. We went to the high school that had been integrated years ago with the yelling, screaming white folks against Black folks type of high school. And then the show that we actually did, it was interesting because we conservatives had us there, but we were able to do it our way and meet with the community and talk to the community. And it was a part of one of that show where a father in the back stood up. And he said something to the effect of, how come we don't hear more of this stuff coming through on a daily basis? And he kind of just made a declaration that he wanted to be a problem for anybody that was going to create problems for his kids. And in that moment, I got chills because I was like, see, this is invisible to the world, and this is what I want to see more of, right? Black men on stage, rousing a community, where a brother stands up and says, I've been in all these feminized spaces, but I have something like I'm a warrior for my children. And this message, I wish this message was coming through in other ways. That was powerful for me in that moment. And it lasted me for another 6 months. Mm-hmm. Like to have him say that and whatever, it was fuel that we were on the right track.
Reef, jump in here, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to like think. I don't know if I have a single favorite one. I enjoy so many, you know. But I think the ones that I appreciate the most is when there is a level of disagreement, you know, on a topic, or when there's like, you know, like a real deep perspective. Like each of you have shared, you know, things about your, you know, your lives, your upbringing, experiences that you've had, where you're, you know, to use Ray's term, you know, more vulnerable in this public setting. And I think that's just really powerful. I mean, when you look at the narrative about men, about Black men, and, you know, like, you know, where they're guarded or stoic or just have this traditional way about them. And I don't think, you know, just in itself, it's a neutral thing. Being stoic is neutral. I don't think that's a negative. You know, being private, I don't think that's a negative, but I do think that there's power at times to share things that can, you know, help others again think like, okay, I'm not crazy, or being able to connect on a deeper level, or to be able to just learn from and be like, you know, oh, I understand you better as a human being. And so I think there have been so many instances of that, you know, throughout the shows. And so that's, you know, that's what I appreciate. I appreciate the, you know, sometimes having this a healthy tension about, you know, where we are, what we're thinking about in the future. I love when we, you know, are able to discuss our families as well, you know, and just like the impact that they've had, and, you know, which is part of our why. So often when we talk, you know, our families, our communities, our work is such a part embedded in our spaces. You know, there are so many people who have jobs where they can shut it off and then just go and do something else. And in our work, we're unable to do that. And I, you know, I love that I'm not able to do that. And it's good to have a space where you can kind of, you know, decompress and unpack some of it, because it's complex and it's sometimes it's really tough.
Bro, that show in New Orleans with MPU, shout out Carrie. But it was the show that we got to interact and engage with your mother, Reef.
Yeah.
That show was dope for me, bro.
I mean, you know, like one reason I'm still on Facebook is for memories. And, you know, like when that comes up every year.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like that's if I had to choose one, because of that significance. Like that's what I would, you know, because it's still like it comes up, and I'm like, oh man, I remember it distinctly. I remember her excitement going there, and I remember her excitement, more excitement leaving, and that was her first. That was her only time seeing us, you know, live. You know, and she would of course listen to it, but like, you know, that was powerful for me.
And she said a ton of supportive stuff.
Absolutely.
To us on that trip. I mean, yeah, it was like straight up just keep doing what you're doing, keep fighting. Like it was so powerful. Now I do want to tell a side story about that particular show.
It was my favorite and least favorite show.
Well, I didn't get, I'll tell my least favorite later, but
all right. So we were in New Orleans and we're on stage in this black owned hotel for the inaugural kickoff of the National Parents Union. That's why we were there. And that's everybody in the room were parent activists of some sort or another. At some point in the show, after we said all this stuff about black children, a white woman in a fur coat stood up and said, what about the white children? All I hear is all this black, people of color, black. What about the white kids? I said something as Van Jones as I could possibly say in the moment. I channeled Van Jones. I said some shit about, well, you know, we're going to need a multiracial coalition if we're going to win. This is the most Bayesian thing I could say, right? It's like all beige and blah, blah, blah.
I appreciate you making that statement right now, brother.
Charles was like, F this shit.
That is not. That did not. Okay. I did not.
He didn't say that. He didn't say that. He said, go to hell. No, he didn't say that. No. He said something like, listen, I get all that. But I want to stand up for what we do and for what we're talking about, whatever, and not get sidetracked or whatnot. It's so funny because that particular woman with all her privilege and all her fur and all that stuff wouldn't let it go and chased us down after the show and whatever and had made a big deal out of it. And I was just like, you guys need to understand how to engage audiences different or better, blah, blah, listen. So she stalked me for like 2 years on Twitter and came after me multiple times and blah, blah. And eventually I turned into Charles. 2 years later or something, I on Twitter had the moment that, so Charles, with apologies.
Yes!
With apologies in the moment.
I appreciate that. It only took,
nope.
You know what? 2 years is better than never. So thank you. I will say, you know, this is where I started to learn about myself, though. And
we miss you. Put it on there. We will see you, what your hairdresser did too,
y'all. Brother. This, I mean, you know, I got a good one. I gotta get it touched up tomorrow. But I will say, with respect to that show, and I did not disrespect this woman. What I said was basically how I started the show today, right? When people ask, why don't we do, you know, things for other groups? And what I said was, there's work that we need to do with black kids and for brown kids, and that's who I'm prioritizing in this conversation. And I said, I understand that you might have a white child that has an IEP and is being mistreated. And I said that there's a place for that work to happen. And once we all do that, we should come together. And this person felt disrespected because I didn't bow down to that. But I have to shout out, you know, this is why Sharice Mother was one of the reasons it was one of the best shows we've ever done. I have to give a shout out to Carrie, who actually did have my back afterwards and in that moment. I am still being called a bully by that lady online, by the way. I was in an article, 6 months ago, that where it referenced that. And some people came to my aid. But the person who really, like Vivette Dukes, that's where I met Vivette Dukes. And she talked to me about that and how much that meant to her, that somebody stood up for her and what she was talking about. Like she cried. Like she like really cried and like thanked me. And I randomly got a call from her like 4 or 5 months ago. I don't know what I did, but I randomly got a call from her and she just was still so grateful. And I think what I started to learn about myself was, it's like, I don't have a problem fighting, but at sometimes I'm like, damn, all right, I don't want to be, it's cool being a contrarian, right? Like I don't have a problem standing on my stuff, But I'm like, damn, I don't want to always be at war. I don't know how to be a peacetime king. I only know how to be a wartime king. And part of the reason, even when I transitioned from this show and I left a lot of different things, I'm like, I've just constantly been perpetually in like a war. And I want to know what it feels like on this other side, because my life is not that bad. Like, things are not terrible and I'm trying to fight for these people. So when you said that about that show, it's reminding me of that. But yes, I've been called a bully and all kind of stuff since then. And I do not have the temperament that Raymond, Sharif, and Chris Stewart have. And I'm working on it, but babies are born with temperament. I don't know how, if you can, you can change a temper, but maybe not temperament. So take this damn screen off of me, man. But that is Listen,
I'll take it anytime anybody tells me that I have temperature control or temperament control.
Hey, Charles, you brought Memphis Lift out. You don't even watch it. Like,
hey, man. Hey, I love me some Memphis Lift. My people. You know what I'm saying? I love them. You know, Sharif said Renee is, you know, Renee be having different favorites, but it's all good. The Memphis Lift got love for me, man. I appreciate it. But that was both one of my favorite shows and one of my least favorites. Because, you know, there was a time in my life where I was really unbothered by what other people thought and felt and like, you know what I'm saying? And I don't know where that started to change. I don't know where it started to annoy me more, where I just had no more patience for it. And that was the start of that. That was the start of that for me. And I wish that lady well. We ain't got to talk. We ain't ever need to speak or whatever. But, you know, but I stand on what I said then. I meant it then and I mean it now.
But this is why it's important for me, though, to have a circle like this, though. When I said earlier that we have all been through some things, that incident where a person like that, full of their privilege, tries to take your livelihood away from you, or tries to expose you publicly in ways that are meant to create risk for you in a lot of different ways, is something that, as Sharif brings teachers, tries to bring Black teachers into schools, some of them are going to encounter. Mm-hmm. As Ray works with principals and tries to get Black males to be better principals, some of them are going to encounter that from people either on staff or people in their community. To be Black and to be in education and to have a leadership role of any sort is meaning, or to be an advocate or an activist, is meaning that someone is always going to try to call your boss. Right. In a way that doesn't happen with another group of people. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to be real clear about this right now. People are calling my funders right now to try to shut me up on multiple things right now. It is not liked what I am saying in the world right now. My message to the world right now is not favorable for everybody. And there are literally people picking up the phone trying to call and make it so I can't continue doing the work that I do, right? That person that you're talking about actually has been calling me a racist online for the last 6 months or whatever, and is part of a crew that is trying to do that. Ray, you know what I'm talking about in terms of, if you're a principal, you're going to face some things like this. Even as a teacher, you might face some things like this. So my message about it is, it's going to come whether you want to or not. How are you going to handle it? Because right. Being resilient Black people and standing in your glory and standing on your truth is, I've said it a million times, the devil is not concerned with you until you're truly doing God's work. Until you fly close to the sun, you'll never get burned in any way, shape, or form. So you can live a completely apathetic life where you're not doing anything that's controversial. You're not saying anything. But how many Black people are you going to save when there are things that need to be said? There are things that need to be done. Things need to be challenged. So I think we need groups like this where we have each other's back and know that we're not crazy when that happens. I fear for the people that are isolated, for the new teachers, for the principals, for the superintendents. I've seen it as a school board member. I've seen the back room of what that looks like. You have a perfectly good individual who is trying to do great things for kids, and they are getting beat up by people in the public for political or racial reasons. And they have both of their hands tied behind their back because professionalism prevents them from swinging. And believe me, some of these people with these degrees would swing if they could. That's where we come in. That's where activist people come in, others, because we could worry less than they have to worry. I feel like I'm on a soapbox, but I so appreciate
you. You're not. I hear exactly what you're saying, but then I think that the conversation needs to shift, though, right? I think the conversation needs to become like, what are we doing in order to kind of actualize the things that we're doing so that we're not beholden to philanthropy? So we're not, so that we're our own bosses and they don't have the ability to call and do those types of things that they're doing in terms of like calling funders, calling board chairs, and trying to silence us in terms of what we're saying. It's kind of, yo, it gives that feeling like racists don't ever want us to have shit. They don't ever want us to be great. They don't want us to advocate for our kids. It's, bro, it's sad, man. It's heart-wrenching. And so for y'all, like what kind of things can we do, or what kind of ways can we pour into other people so they're less dependent on philanthropy and more thinking about how they can raise their funds in order to run their businesses the way that they need to run them?
I mean, I'll just say one thing. Charles and I have had this conversation a lot privately. Once you have slept in a car in East Oakland as your primary residence, it makes it hard for people to think they can take something from you and it's going to crush you, right? I think you have to be willing in some ways to lose some things if that's what it takes for your people. I think the problem is we get so safe sometimes with all of our grants and all of our nonprofit industrial complex relationships that we forget that sometimes the struggle is a struggle. And sometimes when you are willing to risk it all, more things come to you, mm-hmm. right? Couple of funders drop, couple of funders come on because they want real fighters. They want real people. They want real things. You might lose a couple. You might win a couple. That's my answer. I'll open it up to the rest of y'all, though, as people who have lost some things.
Well, I just want to hop in real quick because I think this speaks very clearly to really our duty and our responsibility, not just to our children, but to our ancestors, right? And if you look at history, the fact is like when you're really doing the real work, you're not going to be supported by this system. And that's just a fact. Like while folks were talking, I was dropping like mad quotes into our personal.
You dropped three quotes.
Yeah.
That's mad quotes. That's mad quotes.
And our John, like Lerone Bennett, like an educator in a system of oppression is either a revolutionary or an oppressor, right? That's real. Like Amos Wilson, many of us use the idea that I am a professional as an excuse not to become humanly concerned or politically concerned with our situation. Like it becomes a point where it's like we have to be honest. And sometimes we get lost within the functions and feeding our families and like all the real material concerns that we have. But at the end of the day, it's like, are we trying to be good materially or are we trying to get our people good? And that is not the same thing. And those things come into conflict ultimately. Because like, yeah, they might give you some trinkets. They might give you some like kudos as you go along. But at the end of the day, they really don't like what we're talking about. You know, all we got to talk, you know, like that Dilbert dude said, you know, black people is a hate group because they think that whiteness as an identity is problematic. Whiteness as an identity is problematic.
Mm. Well, I will say we are a hate group. We hate injustice. We hate injustice like hell. So sometimes the devil calls you what they are, right? Like that's the way projection works. You call people what you are, right? You call civil rights racism. You know, you call racism a picnic. I don't know. It's just it's like always flipping things around. But
right,
I think you're right. I think you're right. Like you know, this revolutionary like. You're not going to get Charles, me, Ray, Sharif to say something that is counter-revolutionary for our people if you put us on the spot, make us say it, even if we're going to lose something in the moment. I think we all have a bit of professionalism. We all have the ability to be professional, but we're not going into Candace Owens territory. Well, Ray is Republican, so I mean, I don't want to dish your party, man, but you know, your peoples.
Listen, you can be professional, but stay sucker free at the same time, right? Like that, I think there's a balance. Mm. Like you know, you can do both. And I can't help but to think, you know, like when George Jackson talked about, you know, patience has its limits. But if it goes too far, it's nothing but cowardice. And, you know, there are times, there are some folks who are hide behind, you know, that professionalism in a way that where they're not protecting, you know, children that they're responsible for. And so how are you a professional if you're not professionally supporting and protecting the most vulnerable in your space? To me, that's being a professional. Like, be a professional in a way that's going to advance the cause, you know, of the children that you're responsible for. If you're not doing that, you know, and I get it. Like, yes, there's, you know, and we've all talked about this, you know, and, you know, with shout out to, you know, Aaron Stark and Sheila Mallory and Chris Johnson, where we would break our, and others, Keith Arrington, all these guys, where we would break our huddles and say, like, and look each other in the eyes and say, don't be afraid to get fired for children tomorrow, you know, when we left our meetings. And I think there are times, and again, we've spoken about this before, where there are people in certain situations and they may not be able to, and that's not everybody's lane, but somebody got to be in that lane. Mm-hmm. We can't all abandon that lane. And I get, like, everybody has to be a part of the movement in the spaces that make the most sense for them. Mm. And everybody can't play it safe. And so, you know, there's going to have to always be a group of people to say, yeah, you know what? I will make the sacrifices necessary to give other people cover, to make sure that I'm pushing it even more. Like, you know, I mean, the whole idea, you know, Ish mentioned it earlier, the Black radical tradition means something. You know, and if we don't have the Black radical tradition, none of the other stuff will work. King doesn't work without Stokely, you know, the Panthers and Malcolm. It doesn't work without some level of Black radical tradition. And when we say radical, it just means being very forthright about, you know, the humanity, protecting the humanity of Black children. That's what radical means, you know, those days and these days. But it's really the most simple, basic form of humanity.
Where you cite that definition? Where is that? Where did you cite that definition?
First of all, go look up Black radical tradition and then hit me up. All right, go look it up first and then hit me up.
But you know, here's some of the magic that I think the show has. Don't give me the full screen. I can focus better if I can look at you all. I think. You know, I think about the last live show that we all did together in Philly. And I think about after that, all four of us had different people approach us for very different reasons. Mm-hmm. And I think that this podcast, because after I just listened to both Ish and Sharif, it's very difficult to be an Ish and a Sharif. And I mean this, like, I truly mean this. I've told him this. I think Sharif is just anointed. He just has, I know he's Muslim. I know we don't have the same religion, but as the folks would say, you know, I hope that don't come off like, you know, disrespectful, Reef. But like, my grandmother would be like, that boy got an anointing on him, right? Like, where he lives in this tradition. He lives around like this radicalism. He knows it. He grew up in it. And, you know, and I know we joke with him about it, but Reef had an upbringing, and we've met both his parents at this point, and it all just makes sense. And sometimes we would tell Reef, like, bro, everybody don't grow up with this thing that you got. I think that Chris has this temperament for the internet, this ability to agitate, but to stay focused and not really get rattled, but stay super consistent on it, right? Like, in a way, I tell them all the time, like, when he tags me or something, I say, okay, are we like just like, are we about to like go in into whatever, or you just like rattling? Like, let me know, because I'm going in a different way. I think Ray is somebody who puts numbers on the board in his school, right? Like, Ray is the person that if you're talking about what you do in schools, he's, before you finish the sentence, he's looking up your scores. He's looking up what you have. And I think for me, you know, one of the things that I think that I did and that I spoke to was, I'm not a freedom fighter. Let me just say it. Like, I do freedom fighting, right? Like, I might do these things in a moment. There was a point when we was in the podcast, right? And like, I felt a lot of pressure that I got so tired of reading anything about education. Like, I just was done. I just was like, I think like Reef would talk about these things and he'd be like, yo, this is what needs to happen. And then I would be like, well, this is what got to happen on Monday. And I think that that is needed because it could be a lot of pressure for somebody coming from a place like the reason I did the podcast, I put a lot of bad in this world and I want to put more good than bad. I wasn't a crazy dude. I didn't do illegal stuff, but there's a righteousness that I think that kind of comes with some of this. I ain't a righteous dude. I don't want to be your kid's role model. I don't want to be your role model. Here's some information I got that can help you use that shit or don't use it. This is what we're trying to do. And I think that's like a special piece that I think that we bring. And so like, cause you just, you know, me and Ray would always mess with Sharif. Like, where do you, cite that, brother. Like, you know, Ray used to mess with him for the first year. Like, where's, like, I can't follow this quote. You know what I mean? And I think that
he's using all that in his dissertation. You know that, right? Hey,
one through five is done, baby.
Congratulations. And I know I'm long-winded and I'll shut up after this, but you need that, and you need a group of people that can have that type of balance, right? Because there are some people that ain't coming home and reading, you know what I'm saying, African like psychology, right? They're not gonna read Naeem Akbar at the crib. I actually do love Naeem Akbar. Sharif and I have that in common. But like, some people are just working 9 hours a day. They coming home, they want to make sure their kids are safe. They kiss their wife on the forehead. They want to turn on ESPN and sip a beer and like, and not feel like they completely, you know what I'm saying, useless to this thing because they hearing so much different stuff, right? And we had so many people that's on so many different parts of the spectrum that I think everybody has somebody that they love on this show and that they hate on this show, and it can probably change from one episode to the next. I think that's what makes a good show. I don't want to watch a show where everybody agrees and said the same thing, because we don't need the rest of you cats, right? It's like, and I think that you got a rich conversation, and I'm really just the fact that this got to 200 episodes, people, it is hard to do this stuff. Like, I know it looks easy, I know it, like, it's a lot of different personalities, and we are brothers, and brothers fight and argue, and like, there are things that are happening, and some days you ain't got it, and some days people got it, or whatever the case is. So I do hope that the people that are here that have been on that journey, that you just appreciate what that was. Like, and I got to a place where I just left everything, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, and I'm still kind of in that space, right? And I had to do that. And Sharif and I had a, you know, I'm not gonna go into our personal conversation about it, right? But Reef was like really there for me, and I think when I was talking to him, he heard something different, like in my voice, like, yo. And without this group of men, I don't have people where that is, right? Because my family's in a different place than a lot of other families are. And my auntie is my favorite person. That's like my best friend. I got people, right? But I don't have a type of situation where if I go to certain people in my family talking about my problems, it sounds like bragging. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just, and that's not putting nobody down from where I come from. You get what I mean? And so having that balance and having that space, I had so many different things coming at me from different directions that my equilibrium was off. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to go from prepping and sitting next to a Benioff in a board meeting and then prepping for a type of conversation that we having with Eight Black Hands, and then like pulling like a gun off of somebody like it within the course of like 2 or 3 days, right? So it's different when I'm in this airspace and people flapping off at the mouth and you like, wait a second, hold on, what is happening right now? Like, I'm off of it, right? And so, you know, I think when we talk about Black mental health, it's buzzwords in it, but I think that a lot of that stuff actually played out here. And I think that, you know, so there are some special things about Eight Black Hands that will always be with me. And I just wanted to thank y'all for that. And I wanted to give that realness and that honesty, because we do this show, it's y'all's now, but it started out as being able to be a space where we could work through stuff with each other, and you just got to be privy to the conversation. Well, we can't do that as freely, because we do got a lot of different eyes on us, and there are consequences to those things. So, you know, I just hope people do appreciate those sacrifices that were made, that they may not have, some they may have seen and some they may not, or they will never see.
Yeah, I'd have to say that I think that America is ignorant about Black males, Black men, our private thoughts, our private thinking, our struggles, the things that we live interior worlds that we carry around that nobody gives a damn about. Nobody really cares about, to be very honest with you. This is just me, one person talking. When I think about America's outlook on the Black male and the Black man, even some of our own contribution to that outlook and that contribution, it's mostly one that doesn't come from a place of care and caring and concern and wanting to know the deep riches, the nuances, the internal life. It's so simplified. It's so simplified and stereotyped and marginalized in a way that's maddening for a lot of people. And that madness, sometimes you have to carry it with you in alienation. You have to walk around alienated from lots of people, including your own family. And sometimes, right? Like including the people around you, including community people, in a way that I don't think it hits everybody else the same. I just don't think that, like, I'm sure somebody's listening to this and say, well, that's all men, or, you know, that can happen to anybody. That's not a male thing or whatever. I think it's different in so many ways. That's understudied, undervalued, not talked about enough. And then when you see a Black man with a problem, you want to attribute all kinds of other stuff to it, except for the alienation that you have put them through for long periods of time, right? So it, to me, is positive when Black males are, number one, leading organizations to get other Black males into education and to be before children. It's positive to me when I have so many people in my network that teach or educate as part of their maleness, as part of their contribution as men to life. I feel like blessed that my network is rich with Black men doing nurturing, amazing intellectual things, right? And some of them are poor, some of them are rich, some of them are middle class, many of them are many different things, but they are contributing in a way that America doesn't expect them to do. And they're not doing it for any damn accolades. On this program, we have had Teachers of the Year. We've had people running big ass systems. Mm-hmm. We've had people that have broken all kinds of like academic expectations for themselves, right? People have come out the Deep South and now live in New York running $100 million budgets and stuff like that, right? So, and that's even with all the alienation. That's even with all the doubt, the belief gap, the being taught since you were 2 years old or 3 years old or 5 years old, shut up, sit down, don't do that, don't touch it, don't go near it, I told you, blah, 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 blah. That's the attitude that we have with Black males specifically, a lot of that. I think Cat Stevens has a song where he says, from the moment I could talk, I was ordered to listen, right? That's, I think, the attitude that I'm so glad our network breaks. Everybody on this show, every one of you.
Still in our 40s,
was that?
Who's the Stevens guy?
Cat Stevens?
I don't know who Cat Stevens is. You don't know who Cat Stevens is.
I will hand my card over to you. No, I
don't. Uncultured.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Who is it? He's like one of the best folk singers of all time.
Oh my God.
Hey, keep that to yourself.
Oh damn.
You know what? That's a matter of fact.
Like Bob Dylan, Cat Stevens.
Speaking of like what you just said, Chris, like that's one of the songs that, and we actually played it. That might have been Freedom Friday. We do need to make this Freedom Sunday, Chris. You know, bring more enlightenment and culture.
That's right.
Cultured in it. But, you know, like, so he has a song out, and we played it on, I think, Freedom Friday. But it's basically talking about a little boy. And, you know, it made me think about the, you know, the Black men you were talking about. A little boy was kept talking to his teacher, kept saying, stop coloring like that. You know, color this way. Mm. This is the rules. Blah, 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 blah. And then it broke him. You know, then he went to a new school and the teacher's like, well, why are you only coloring that way? And he repeated what his teacher used to say, like, no, I have to do it this way. You know, I have to conform. And the new teacher's like, no, like, it's freedom. It's like, open up. And he's like, no, I can't. Like, by that time, he had already been, his mindset had been shaped in a very particular way. And we have to be so careful about the messages that we send. So it's a really dope, dope song. Yeah, he's a Yusuf Islam now, but Ray didn't hear him as Cat Stevens. I know he ain't gonna know Yusuf Islam. So like, forget that.
You see this public shaming of Black men that happens?
In some spaces, it's okay. In some spaces, it's okay.
And some places you earn it, right? like the cookout, right? Anyways, as we come to the end of our 200th episode, I would just love to do what we always do, which is a wrap of final words from everybody on this show. I feel so full and gratified by having done this show with you brothers, but more than that, to have gotten to know you in ways that wasn't the same when we started this thing. Like, we've come a long way on a long journey, and we've shared a lot that the audience will never see it, They can never see all of it. They can only see a piece of it. But let's do a round robin and everybody. And we'll start with you, Ish, because some of this was partially unfair for you tonight, right? Because this is your final show on your residency with the Eight Black Hands. And so much of this was retrospective. But we'll start with you as somebody who's been here with us for this month. Just final words for the audience.
Yeah, first thing I got to say is that, you know, I used to see you brothers have y'all live shows at places. And I'm like, oh, man, I wish I could be part of that conversation. So being a part of the conversation, even on the limited time, has truly been humbling. And I feel more than, like, grateful to the work, even if I don't agree with people 100% of the time. Something that people always have a tendency to tell me. But for me, it's more than that. It becomes kind of a space to be like, okay, this is what I think, this is what I believe. I'm going to put it out there to the world. And that I've seen y'all wrestle with it, with some of the ideas that, you know, I've shared. And I've wrestled with some of the ideas that y'all have shared with me. And it is truly a humbling experience. I hope to come back at times and not to lose the connection with y'all. You know, even from the first time I met Dr. Cole at Edlock conference, you know, from the first time I've spoken to, you know, Sharice's mom attending a conference that I spoke at, and she just came up to me and started like waxing philosophical, you know what I mean? Like, it becomes a larger conversation that we're all apart about, you know, all apart. And it's something that doesn't have a conclusion. And I hope to, you know, contribute later to a deeper level of thinking and conversation when it comes to what's important for our children, especially around education and liberation ultimately. So I just love y'all. And I don't say that lightly.
Appreciate you, brother. Appreciate you for being on and for adding so much value. Things can get stale after a while too. If you don't have somebody that like does seriously disagree, like the standardized testing issue of which I'm right. You know, if you don't have people come in and shake up your thinking, gets a little stale, gets a little old. So this has been a good run with you here. And we'll definitely want to continue the conversation and the dialogue. Raymond, how about you, brother? What do you got for final words?
So final words for me tonight. I just completed chapters 4 and 5 of my dissertation. I'm ready to hit send. Hopefully I can defend this thing this spring. I'll definitely defend this spring. But thank you to you guys for allowing me the space to be able to bounce things, bounce ideas off of you. And thanks for all the unanswered emails when I've sent you guys chapters to read and all that motivation, you know, when we talk about Black people in this space. But lastly, and most importantly for me is that, man, I want to big up my homie, man. I want to big up Charles. Bro, this show has a different kind of energy when you're on. I know that, you know, your break or your leaving the show was something that you had to do for yourself. But I hope that I hope and pray that you coming back to the show was something that you have to do as well. And that's where I'm at. That's my energy.
You see, I like you don't just put on the spot. You know what I'm saying? Like
altar call. Altar call. Now, does anybody in the church that needs Jesus right now come to the front? And if you don't, you're going to hell. And I'm not gonna call you Dr. Ankrum.
I know it.
Okay. Just ahead of time. I just want you to know. I'm all out of doctors right
brother,
now.
We call everybody in salute in this country what they want to be called. I call you whatever you want to be called, brother. You tell me what to call you. I got you.
Okay, I'll call you Ray. Sharif.
Yeah, listen. Cole, it's great to have you on again. I hear you about not putting you on the spot, but you know, I full-heartedly support. You know what Ahi Ankrum said. Ish, appreciate you coming on, bro. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you are, you know, we need more like
intellectuals as educators. You know, I think when we see, you know, how students are being taught, what they're being taught, you know, so often there's, you know, a lack of intellectualism in the classroom and within schools. And then we wonder how come kids are coming out the other side, not being able to critically think about the space and the context and the history, you know, that they're engaged with. And listen, this Eight Black Hands, as you know, and I've said this before, and because it's 200 episodes, for those, you know, those who have not heard it, listen, I came to some of this part kicking and fighting. I disagreed with these three brothers about the creative direction of the show. But I'm so glad that their vision was much larger than what I could have possibly had. I'm so glad that they had far more courage about this type of work than I could have ever mustered. And I really appreciate, you know, you all pushing me, pushing each other, pushing yourselves to be able to reach, you know, the 50th episode, let alone the 200th. So I'm in awe of like how you all think about some of this work and about communication about the work, you know, communicating, you know, just, and uplifting important messages, or, you know, around the space. So I'm grateful for that. You know, I think it's been incredible to, you know, be around you all, but, and learn how you think about messaging, about various tactics that are necessary in any movement, and really just thickening my understanding and helping me to shrink, you know, the many blind spots that I have in this space. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. My final word on all this is to say that I appreciate all of you for actually signing on to do this for so long, and to be together. Like we have been doing this through many weeks, and we have been there for our audience almost every week, like in a long succession of meeting or Zoom calls, and then podcast, and then a video broadcast, and we stuck with it and we did it. And I'm very appreciative of that. I also would like to say that this has been completely DIY. We don't have a grant for this. We don't have funding for this. At some point, we had a little bit of support to try and figure out what we were going to do with it. But what you are seeing, folks, honestly happens for two reasons. One, because of these brothers that actually give their time, their energy, their resources, and their kind of their talent to make this happen. It also happens, though, because we have a great group, number one, of Patreon supporters who've been supporting us for a long time and not asking for a lot from us, which has been very helpful, more helpful than I think that they would know. And we have been trying to actually get out of DIY mode and be able to be more giving to that community of folks, because we are, like I said, full-time job people. We got full-time jobs. Some of us like one runs a school, runs an organization, another runs an organization, right? We employ people. We, you know, there's stuff going on, but we want this and we think this is important. And for, there are people who are in our comments right now tonight who've been with us for so long. What many people don't know is there's a book club every week of people that have been with us for a long period of time. Before the show, they actually have a communal learning opportunity where they learn together, they read, they push, they're organized, they push forward the ideas that they're reading, and they've done it from our platform and through our name and through organizing. And they've been our most consistent group of nurturing people. Like they've been a small community of folks. And I can't end this 200th episode without lifting up the fact that we've got people in the comments right now. Mama Toya, L. Michelle Johnson, Jamoke Hinton, Tanae and Jennifer. I could keep going down the list of people that have organized things for us. They run a whole Facebook group that is more active than our Facebook group, our very own. And that is the way movements and things always seem to work out, is there's always this group of people that don't get all the credit for how much they're doing and moving the thing forward. But in terms of our organization, to any extent that we are organized and we are being successful, a big part of that is this family, this community of folks that you'll never see on the show. Some of them have been on the show, But you don't see all that goes on behind us. And I just want to call that out because this is a community effort. That's the way this show works. We don't have some big grant to make it happen. If you are listening to this and you're connected to grant-making organizations, if you are the spook by the door in any philanthropy,
not the spook.
We would love you. We would love for you to make our dreams come true and full of fund a full tour of the Eight Black Hands, because we want to go to every city and declare a state of emergency for Black academia and Black academics and Black student outcomes. And we would love to come to your city and your town. We were treated very well in Indy by a local group that wanted to bring us there to sound the alarm on the state of emergency. And that was a great show. We would love to do that more. Anyways, if you are listening, make it happen for us. We appreciate you all. This has been the 200th episode.
A final thought, brother?
That is my final thought.
I said, you want me to have a final thought, brother?
Oh, did you not have a final thought? I'm so sorry.
It's all good.
No, your time has passed. Anyways, thank you all so much for... all right, brother. Have a final thought.
I will say this.
What's going to happen?
This has been great.
Boom.
This has been really, really great. And, you know, like I said, I left a lot of things. I didn't just huff and leave the A Black Hands. I left a lot of things at the same time. I'd be remiss since I'm not under privilege anymore. When I left the hospital, I served since 2016. And the kids and, you know, some of our sick kids at the hospital made me this artwork, man. And one of the things that I wish that I could talk about, but I couldn't, just because hospital stuff is different. Just around what you can talk about and what you can't, but I'm not under privilege in the same way anymore. Just been working really hard to end sickle cell, and those hospitals in California have been working really hard. I love those kids. They sent me that after I stepped away, and it definitely makes me emotional. I would say this. I am so grateful to have been able to be a part of this. We really caught lightning in a bottle, and you know, and I think this show started it started out as a necessity. It was a necessity for us. And we started out saying this, and people think it's in jest, but it's real. Like, so we would not go crazy. What is this thing about Black men going crazy? You know what I'm saying? And like, we don't have those conversations in earnest ways. And I think that four, and I'm gonna count Ish as five, you know, powerful brothers being able to come together and really speak that power, not just like, you know, like in the ether, but like, yo, these are people that's trying to make this stuff happen every single day, that's having to you know, make those sacrifices. And I think I just hope that everybody's really felt the blessing that's come from it. It has blessed my life in a lot of different ways, and I hope that you all as listeners, it has blessed you, but more so than just blessed you as a form of entertainment, like that you've really been able to take some tools from us. That's one thing that we really all worked on, was to make sure that you had stuff that you could use on Monday, that you could use next Monday. I really hope that you took from this show, and that you continue to take from the show, that we are on our own, but if we come together as a people, that's more than enough. And I really hope that people took away that there's brilliance in our communities and in our people. And we don't have a problem working with anybody else. Anybody that want to work with me and help me out, you know what I'm saying? That's a blessing from God. That's a gift from God. But I don't expect it. And I think us as a people, if you got anything from this Eight Black Hands show, is we got to stop expecting the system to do things that it is not going to do. It is never done. It is not in their best interest to do. But we are smart enough and we wise enough. And so I just appreciate Ray, Chris, you know what I'm saying, Reef. I appreciate the brotherhood. I appreciate the pushes. I appreciate the fights. I appreciate when we get on each other's nerves. I appreciate the way we show up for each other. I truly love you cats. And I mean that, you know what I'm saying? And I think for anybody out there that feels like that watches our show, or you watch some other people and those names have gotten big and they playing in that social justice space or whatever the case is, I really, really hope that you're not cosplaying. Like, I really hope that you don't put that pressure on yourself. I'm not even saying it from a place where I'm getting at you. I'm saying it from a place where that shit will get lonely and tired after a while. Make sure that you eating on some real meat for your community and you ain't just, you know, doing the cotton candy thing, man. Our community can't afford it and it don't need it. It needs you to be you the same way it needs the Eight Black Hands to be the Eight Black Hands. And I appreciate being a part of this.
There we go. Appreciation all the way around. Confirmed. Showed all of
for
us.
My, for my people, my kids, that is beautiful, man. They did a great job. So they, some of them watched. So I wanted to make sure they got a chance to see it. So
now I feel like I should have had something to hold up.
You didn't leave the hospital that you served at for 8 years.
I'm drinking more water these days. My old butt. There you go. All right, y'all. This has been 200, episode 200 of the Eight Black Hands. We love y'all for watching, for supporting, and for being there for us. We continue being a problem for the system, because the system deserves a problem until they do right by our 8 million black kids. We'll catch you next time.